Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, Skyping with me. Matt, one, how are you? Two, I survived Greg Popovich and David Stern in the same afternoon.
Man, you had the Death Star. You had the Empire coming through.
I will say Popovich did do that that choke thing, that using the force choke thing on me, but right before I lost consciousness, he let go.
Did you ask him a question?
I did. I asked him about with Ginobili out and Parker out, with Ginobili out and Duncan out, does he feel the need to adjust how he uses Parker to maybe not make him like take on more scoring load for like more pounding and more pressure on Parker? And he actually like didn't think it was a stupid question. He gave me a pretty solid answer about how they trust their system and it's not, you know, they don't feel the need to use anybody any differently. They just plug guys in. But didn't like scoff at me, and he made a joke about wanting to get Tim Duncan out of town. It was a really enjoyable experience.
Are you disappointed?
I was a little disappointed because I thought it was a decent question, but at the same time, I could totally understand why he would think it would be a stupid question. So part of me was thinking, I really hope he tries to embarrass me here.
I'm okay. I'm really beat up. Like, 13 games last night all at the same time was a little rough.
None of them good.
And somebody, I think it was SB Nation NBA, mentioned that. It was like, oh, a good night of NBA games. And I was like, what are you watching? Like, you know what? Here's what's crazy. I'm at a game tonight, and so you guys have the wheel, and there's two games on, and I had 13 last night, and I have 12 tomorrow.
It's not the most balanced schedule.
Last night I kept flipping. I was like, all right, there are 13 games. I was like, I'm just going to watch every game until commercial and then flip.
Yeah.
And surely I will pick up. And it's the trick is when you're kind of working for a blog like this, we're supposed to get video and GIFs and, you know, notable stuff and news and dunks and the whole thing. And so usually it's like, well, all right, like, there's so many games on. Surely if you're watching something, you'll be catching something of interest, especially if you're flipping through like that. You can't miss everything. I missed everything good.
Yeah. There is a rhythm to it, and there are nights where you can't miss anything good. You hit it correctly every game. You get to the right point. There's a good flow with game to game. And then there are other nights where you're just scrambling. You're trying to cover the Spurs 3-point shooters. Like you're trying to rotate. You can't get to the right spot at the right time, and you're giving up everything good.
Boston Toronto was surprisingly fun, especially because Rudy Gay went on a stretch where he was just dominant for about 7 minutes in the third quarter.
Okay.
And really, you know, he hits, he drives and kicks to a cutter who then drives and kicks back to him for an open three. He steals the inbounds pass off of what may be the dumbest pass I've ever seen Jason Terry make. He threw a half-court lob, essentially. From the inbounds. He threw a lob to half-court.
Wow.
It was like a duck. And I mean, that's like, that's thrown into coverage as a quarterback. And Gay just played safety and jumped up and swatted it forward and then got the layup and won. So he played really well. Finished with 24 points on 23 shots. You know, missed a shot that would probably brought them within reasonable distance to maybe tie it. So, you know, Rudy Gay's still Rudy Gay.
Right.
As much as Toronto fans were. I mean, I was taking like immense amount of grief last night. And I realized I was being hypocritical because what I said was, are we really going to judge this trade after a week? And somebody was like, well, you judged it the day of.
What's your job?
Yeah, that's part of it. And that part of it is, like, look, when I write, like, a great post on a trade that happened, the idea is, here's what it looks like right now.
Right.
But that's not, I'm never going to say, like, this will definitely not work out. There are trades where you can't say that. Like, anything involving Corey Maggette. No.
I think after the Marcus Gasol, Pau Gasol trade, that was my lesson of learning, like, we really need to wait a couple years and see how things develop off that point. Like, you can say, like you said, this is what it means now. This is how it looks now. But you can't definitively say, like, someone won or lost this trade long term. Like, you just can't.
Here's another good example. The Mavericks, when they traded for Jason Kidd, we thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Even though it was a risk. And then immediately they weren't better, but he was a huge part of the championship.
Right.
So it's like, you know, how do you kind of factor that? Boston-Toronto was fun. Indiana on a back-to-back-to-back. Third game in 3 nights because of the rescheduled game.
Getting it done.
They held Philadelphia to 69 points. I mean, look, and Philadelphia fans were like, did you see who we put on the floor? And I was like, I get that. Thad Young's out. Jason Richardson's done for the year. I get that. Any NBA team, like, talk to anybody and, you know, they'll talk about how much it's effort. Like, it's just effort. And when you don't have, when you're tired, you don't have effort.
Right.
And Indiana had every reason to not win that game. And for them to go in to Philadelphia and smoke them.
Yeah.
By 19 points on their floor on a third game in three nights, Indiana's tough as nails.
Yeah.
They also scored 159 points combined, and the Rockets scored 140 on their own the night before. So that kind of shows you where the two conferences are at. Wizards, big win over New York.
Yeah, John Wall had himself a little night.
John Wall. Ooh.
Wait, but I thought he was a terrible point guard who was a bust who was never going to be good.
That's what because he doesn't have a father.
Right, that's what I heard.
21 points, 9 assists. He was really great, too. He made a lot of really good, smart plays. Blocked Carmelo, went coast to coast.
Ooh.
Melo had himself a really good game. He actually was pretty efficient. 31, 9, and 3. J.R. Smith did not. the Knicks, those three-pointers don't fall. They're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to, do you trust the Knicks three-point shooting more than you trust the Magic, or as much as you trusted the Magic in 2009? I think that's going to determine whether or not the Knicks make the Eastern Conference Finals. That, to me, is the question.
I don't know that it has so much to do with the Knicks and their shooting as it does with just the rest of the conference outside of Miami. I don't know that I trust anybody. In that, well, I mean, I guess I trust Indiana the most.
You know, if they're hitting threes, they can beat Indiana.
Yeah. And we'll see. We'll see how Chicago is once Rose comes back.
But if and that's the one team that Knicks fans are like, we don't want to play Chicago. And Chicago fans are like, they don't want to play Chicago. But I think I don't know. I still like Indiana. I was really shaken after that first month of the season, but they've really rounded into form, and I feel really good about my prediction that the Pacers would finish second in the East. I still think they're going to catch New York. I think the Pacers are the second best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, maybe.
Despite their offensive issues. Clippers, without Chris Paul, without Blake Griffin, and without Jamal Crawford, beat the Orlando Magic by 10. The Magic did not have like half their roster either. It was sad.
Ugh.
I mean, until you know, like the featured score on, you know, on the box score page, they have like the whoever like was stood out. Orlando's was Kyle O'Quinn with 10 points, 9 rebounds.
I talked to him at a pre-draft workout. Nice guy.
He's not.
What?
He's not a nice guy.
He was at the pre-draft camp.
No, you were mistaken.
Okay.
See, I'm a Missouri fan, so Kyle O'Quinn is dead to me forever. Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. He's a Norfolk State kid.
Yeah, I guess that matters.
It does. Do you have any idea how that was a horrible day? I think that was trade deadline day too. So like it was trade deadline day last year, and like I worked all day, and then it's like, oh, the Missouri game's starting, and like I'm laying in bed sideways, like almost like comatose, like this is completely vegetable, and just watching them lose. I'm like, okay, I'm going to bed now.
Yeah.
Eric Bledsoe, 27 points.
Yeah, it's weird that he dominated Jameer Nelson and Antoine Moore.
3 assists, 4 turnovers.
6 steals though, 3 blocks. He stuffed the stat sheet.
There we go. They just out executed him, and that was not a whole lot to say because you know, man, the Orlando starting lineup was Etwan Moore, Jameer Nelson, Vucevic, Harkless, and Nicholson. That's just a young lineup.
That's a summer.
What's really crazy is I feel like we're making fun of that now, but I feel like in 4 years we're gonna be like, that's a really good lineup.
No, we won't. That's an awful lineup. It will be an awful lineup in 4 years, and that's almost like you take Jameer Nelson away and just throw in any point guard, any D-League point guard, and that's a summer league roster.
Yeah, but still, I feel like Vucevic, Harkless, and Nicholson are going to be good pros. They've all shown pretty good things this year.
Outside of Vucevic, do you want either of those guys starting for you long-term?
Well, Andrew Nicholson, like if I'm looking at long-term, I'm not necessarily against. I want to see how he works out. He's actually played pretty well. He's shown a lot of good things.
Ugh.
Harkless, I don't know much about. I haven't been able to, like, Harkless is one of those guys that's on the floor, and I'm like, okay, he's a forward.
Yeah.
That's all I know about him. Like, he's a forward. I don't really notice anything from him. Houston-Miami was pretty fun. Houston made a late run. Miami was in control. I do want to talk about this with you. I had to post a video in a little bit because there's a jump ball. And Haslam taps the ball back at midcourt. It's a midcourt. Actually, I think it was in the cylinder on the right side, on the far court, under Miami's own basket. Haslam wins the tip and tips it to Wade, and Wade throws a 3/4 court alley-oop to LeBron.
Come on.
I'm not kidding.
They got to stop doing this, because one, it's too much cool basketball for me to handle. Like, they do this a couple of times a season, right? Maybe four or five times a season. And I just, like, it looks awesome, but I don't think obviously they don't, but, like, the casual fan doesn't realize how ridiculous of a pass that is.
Well, it's one of those things where that highlight 10 years ago is going to be played over and over and over.
Yeah.
They're honestly, and not to exaggerate, the two of them together are doing things that they make individual highlight plays we've never seen before, and they do it every single night. There's very rarely been teams with this much talent to play together. Like Pippen and Jordan didn't play like this,
right?
You know,
and this is just today's athleticism and how the game has evolved and how players have evolved with training and everything. But you look at like Blake Griffin dunks, Rubio assists, Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving breaking guys down, the alley-oops from LeBron and Wade. They are doing absurd things every night. And they're doing it so often that it becomes boring and routine, which is impressive in and of itself. Like, the fact that Blake Griffin does dunks that we're just, like, yawning at now, but if any other player did them, we'd be freaking out. And that's fun.
That's what I think is funny is the Kobe dunk is actually kind of an interesting debate, because obviously a lot of people are like, that's the dunk of the year. And the biggest reason, I think, is because it's Kobe. And I'm kind of like, look, I mean, he got past him. To me, if it's got to be a dunk of the year, you got to go right at him and over it.
Yeah.
That's why, to me, Griffin's over Peck was Griffin's over Perk was a big one last year. And while Barnes over Pekovic this year. When you go up and challenge him and dunk with him, he's right there in your face. That's a whole other deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it is pretty crazy that we've kind of become desensitized to LeBron and Wade's death machine. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Cleveland beat Charlotte. It's by 22. Conrad, who we always seem to talk about on this podcast, told me, like, well, you know, they beat a bad team. They blew out a bad team at home. Like, that's a step in the right direction, right? I'm like, no, it's the Bobcats. You get no credit. You get no points. Move on. Brooklyn, Detroit. If you get a chance, you need to go back and watch that one.
Okay.
It was really good all over, especially because it was one of the few games in which we had a legit big man battle. Greg Monroe versus Brook Lopez was a lot of fun.
Ooh, I'm excited about that.
Lopez had 17-9. Monroe had 23-10. It was a really good battle on both ends. Kyle Singler played pretty well. In terms of off-ball stuff, I haven't looked at his line, but I just noticed, I was like, oh, he made a pretty good play there. He made a good rotation. 12 points on 7 shots, so not bad. Good. I was saying that blind, and turns out I was not completely wrong. Rodney Stuckey had 4 points on 7 shots.
Oh, God, Rodney.
He needs to get traded so badly.
To Europe?
So badly. I think he'd be okay on somebody else. I mean, I think he'd, you know, I think there's teams that could use him.
What does he get, like 9 a year?
That's one where, I'm not sure, it's too much, I know that. He gets paid too much annually. this is another game, this one, much like the Lakers game, I feel like Detroit played the better game and lost. There's 2 games in a row now, they've lost tough ones, where I feel like they played the better game and lost.
Yeah.
Which is difficult, and everyone's like, that can't happen. I'm like, yeah, it happens all the time in the NBA. 82 games, it just does.
Stuckey gets 8.5, but next year is 8.5 not fully guaranteed. It's only guaranteed for an estimated $4 million.
That was a bad deal when they signed it, so, but that's not so bad. I think they need to move him now. I mean,
yeah.
The Pistons, I think, have a direction. They need to start.
That's actually a nice trade chip for someone acquiring him, because you can cut that in half without penalty.
I will ask you this. I don't get this. People are starting to talk about this. Not Pistons fans, because most of them are not morons. Well, that's not true, but I've noticed the teams that are bad have fewer fans, so I have to deal with less idiocy. But people are like, well, do you think the Pistons should trade Greg Monroe? Because they've got Drummond now. I'm like, what? You got two really good big men. No one in the league has two good, like, Memphis has two really good big men. The Lakers, theoretically, have two really good big men.
I don't think that's a terrible idea. I think that that's something you can explore because you could probably get an excellent, excellent veteran for Greg Monroe. Like, I don't think that's something you have to do, but I don't think that's something that you would think is absurd. Like, I see what you're saying.
I'm trying to think of who... Monroe's had a down year, but he's got so much skill as part of it. He's a skilled big man, and those are really rare. And I feel like he's gonna develop, and once he starts, if he learns how to pass out of the double, he's gonna be really good. And that lefty hook is just, you know, like, I wouldn't trade him for Al Jefferson right now because I like his upside.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying, like, you get, like, a really good wing player for him. Like, you don't trade him for another big man.
Think, who are the really good wings that aren't elite? That's why Batum's weird, right? Because you would think, like, that was my, I was like, well, Batum got fits. Everybody's like, I thought I was a Portland, I would trade Batum for Monroe.
If he had a better contract, what about someone like Luol Deng?
That's not bad. No, that's not bad.
That might be, like, a good exchange.
Oh, hey, you traded Tayshaun Prince. Now you have Luol Deng getting older. Cycle continues. Memphis lost to Atlanta and just prompted an absolute, I mean, Grizzlies fans are losing it. And Raptors fans are just feeding the fire. It's weird.
Really? That's weird? Because that seems like that's what fans do.
Well, I don't understand it, because it's like, what? This doesn't have anything to do with you. Like, they're not conference rivals. Like, what? You know, Knicks fans do this with the guys they trade to.
Yeah.
Like, Knicks fans want the Nuggets and Rockets to fail very badly. And I'm like, you're not in the conference. Why do you care? Like,
well, to be fair, Nuggets fans were that way with Melo and the Knicks.
I don't mind that, though, because, like, Melo tanked their season. Like, the story, also, like, stories around here, if you start asking about Carmelo Anthony, you hear some pretty interesting things.
Well, I'm sure that there was a lot of catering and stuff like that happens. However, I wonder also how much of that is sour grapes of spinning it to where, oh, things were really bad. It might not have been that bad.
No, it's less about that, more about just like, wow, it's just those eye-opening NBA stories.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the same things about KG here.
I will say that, I don't know, I don't blame the Nuggets, like, people in Denver, because this is a guy that said, I don't want to be here. You're not good enough for me. Like, I'd be insulted too.
But why is that insulting? Why does he have to want to live there?
Because of the reasons why he clearly wanted to go to New York. Like, you're not big enough, I can't be a big enough star. You know, it'd be one thing if he was just like, I can't win here, I want to go where I want to win. That wasn't what this was about. He arguably left a better team.
But if you want to live in New York because you love the lifestyle of New York and you love the market size and you love the food and you love, like, just the people and whatever, why do you have to stay somewhere else? Because
you've got free agency and you could have left the next year.
Right, but then if he leaves the next year, it's, oh, this guy's so horrible, he wouldn't even give us the courtesy of making sure, like, we get something for him in return. Like, there's no win there. That's the problem I have with complaining about. There's
well,
no
that, that I wouldn't have a problem. Well, that would be stupid. Like, there, that I don't have a problem with. But
there's
I do have
no
a problem with guys tanking. I have a problem with guys screwing up chemistry, screwing up locker room, and generally screwing over a city. Like, I'm not going to blame the fans for cheering against them.
I think screwing over a city is really extreme there.
Well, I mean, just in terms of, like, just insulting the city. Because it is an insult.
I don't think it's an insult at all. I think that's the city being sensitive.
Mm. I mean, they're usually not. Like, Denver doesn't have, like, from what I can gather, they don't have the inferiority complex or the superiority complex. Like, St. Louis wants to put itself on a level of Chicago, and I'm like, have you been to Chicago? Like, you are not Chicago. you know, even Kansas City that a little bit. I think with Dallas is kind of what they do. Like, well, like, we're kind of like Dallas. I'm like, you are not like Dallas. No. I was born there. I love Kansas City. You are not like Dallas. Go home. No. But Denver doesn't really do that. I just think that a lot of it was, again, though, if you're forcing your way out of a place when you're under contract, I'm not going to blame fans getting mad at that. You just want to be like, oh, yeah, it's good. Abuse me. Like, no.
I don't know. I think that we get into some very serious, like, sense of ownership and entitlement things, and not saying he doesn't have a sense of entitlement because he clearly does.
But again, he's under he's got the option to leave. Free agency allows him to make that decision.
Right, and he's giving them the courtesy, like, whether you think it's genuine or not, he is giving them a courtesy of saying, look, I don't want to be here anymore. I would like to go somewhere else. If you don't want to lose me for nothing, you know, here's where I'm aiming to go.
I don't remember. Did they have the cap space to sign him?
New York?
Yeah.
I don't think they did.
Right. So he forced it. He didn't force him to go, because that's the thing. If he entered free agency, he wouldn't be able to go where he wanted to. He would have had to go somewhere else.
Well, like, maybe they would have with amnesties. I don't know. But he didn't force anything. Like, he said, this is where I want to go. I don't want to go anywhere else. They could have kept him and then said, I dare you to.
The organization. That was pretty wildly reported. I mean,
I'm saying, like, they chose to be forced into a trade. He could have said, like, this is the only place I'll go. And they could have said, okay, have fun trying to get there in free agency. We're going to keep you through your contract.
Here's how I think you should go about it. I think you should go about it the way Paul Millsap has. Because Paul Millsap's been like.
Paul Millsap's not a star.
Nobody thinks of himself as one. Everyone thinks of himself as one. Everybody in the NBA. Mario Chalmers thinks of himself as one.
Like, right. But he.
Even Josh Smith, I think, is actually a pretty good comparison. Like, Smith's like, oh, yeah, I'm probably not going to resign. Like, I don't really like it here. But, you know. And then, but he's also not like, don't trade me here, don't trade me there. Because that was part of it is these teams are forced into trading into places where they don't get the maximum return because they can't do deals with anybody else because their agent makes it clear, oh no, you don't want to trade for him. Don't trade for him. He'll be very mad at you. Oh, no. Only trade him where he wants to go.
That's an excellent point. Like, instead of blaming Carmelo so much, this league is driven by agents. Like, not saying Carmelo doesn't deserve any blame here, but this is an agent's league. Like, it's not a coach's league. It's not a player's league. The agents drive this league, and you see that in reporting every day. And that's probably where the majority of the ire should go. Not saying the agents are bad people. They're doing their job, but their job is more important than anybody else's job in the league.
In my opinion, I think the best thing to do is to just be like, look, I'm here. Don't worry about next year, whenever. I'm gonna finish this thing out with my team. I'm not demanding a trade.
Oh, you mean like LeBron did? That worked out. He didn't catch any flack for that.
No, and that's a good point. But that's a very singular situation, and I don't agree with a lot of the flack that he took. But I'm saying like, you know, where I come down on it. A lot of it, and honestly, it's why, like I mentioned, I don't think that when I talk about how I think KG actually is okay with a trade potentially because of the way that he talked about the same thing in 2007, I'm not disagreeing with it. I think it's good that KG does the way he does. Like, KG says the right thing. Like, I want to be here. I love my teammates. I don't want to move. Do that. Just say that. You know?
But I don't know. If there's honesty behind it, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, that gets into a whole bigger discussion because, like, I know people that believe that honesty is always good, and it's not true. Like, there's just times when you don't want to be honest. There's honesty, and then there's being rude. And, like, there's a line there that you need to be cognizant of. I think it's okay to be honest with the organization. Like, don't lie to the organization and be like, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to resign. Gone. You know, tell them, like, well, no, I'm probably going to go look for the most money I can make, which is I can make more from, you know, sponsorships and everything else in New York. But I'm going to play hard for you as long as I'm under contract. I signed a contract to play for you, and you have that right. You know, this is the system that we work under.
Right, but then it gets leaked out by people within the organization that this guy wants out at a certain point.
No, it usually gets leaked out by the agent.
Stuff gets leaked out by organizations all the time.
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting that you feel that...
I think it gets into this weird like ownership thing, of players.
No, it's just a contract. It's you signed an agreement. You didn't sign an agreement to say I'm going to play for you as long as I want to, and then I'm going to hold you hostage until I get what I want.
Right, but in normal jobs where you sign a salary or a contract, there isn't a system set up to where you can be traded to another company. Like, it's just different than saying,
no,
hey,
but you can't be transferred.
If I sign a contract with CBS, which I did, if I sign with CBS, they can't say, you know, in a year we're going to trade you for Dan Devine at Yahoo.
No, but
and that's where the difference is.
But they can be like, we need you to move to our Philadelphia branch.
Sure, they could do that. But what I'm saying is that you're getting moved to entirely different places, entirely different jobs, entirely different structures at times. Whereas it's not exactly the same as a regular
job. It's
not
exactly the same, but I think it's close enough. I mean, I don't think that he's like, oh no, like, I mean, what? I'm sorry. Your argument is, well, he has a right to work for whatever organization he wants, so he went to the Knicks. I mean,
yeah, why not? He wants to live in New York.
No, I'm not about the organization. That's the joke. It's like James Dolan, Isaiah Thomas, CAA, the whole messed up thing.
Oh, sure. It's screwed up. I don't know why we're pretending, though, that Denver is this awesome organization. Like, they're an organization.
Mm. I was okay. Hmm. Interesting. Leave your thoughts in the comments. This is an interesting kind of debate. Do you support getting screwed over by your superstars?
It's not getting screwed over.
It is getting screwed over.
It's not, though. It's not. It's you can choose to play the victim if you want to choose to play the victim as a fan. But that's not – he did everything to not screw them over, essentially. If you say, oh, play out your contract and then go somewhere else, that's screwing over the organization. If you have intentions to leave and you don't inform them of that.
There's a difference here, though. It's not like he said, well, yeah, I'm probably going to leave. He left them alone. Like, he forced their hand.
He didn't force their hand.
Reports, everybody who reported on indicated they put pressure on the org.
That's on them to feel pressured, isn't it? If he wants to go to one destination and they maybe don't have the cap space, I don't remember, but they maybe don't have the cap space to acquire him, how do you feel pressure to lose him? That's a paranoia that I don't get.
I mean, I agree with that. That's why I love what the Lakers are doing with Dwight.
Yeah.
The Lakers are like, good luck. Nobody's got cap space.
That's where I have a problem with, like, the vernacular that gets thrown around of force this or this guy deserves this or whatever. Like we choose these extreme words of you hate this player. Like, those words mean something, and they often don't mean what we're using them as. Like, I don't think Denver was forced into anything. I think they chose to get out of a situation.
So the Hornets beat the Suns. Let's move on. Hornets beat us. They finally played defense. They held Phoenix to 84 points.
That's the Monty Williams teams we knew last year.
You know who's been really good this year? Al-Farouq Aminu.
He has been surprisingly good because they don't make him dribble the ball.
He dribbled a little bit last night. He dribbled in traffic and finished.
It's very like you're cutting to the basket. Like, I would actually love to go look at his synergy numbers because I bet his cutting to the basket is phenomenal.
Yeah. He's been made some really great defensive plays. He hit a pull-up jumper, and Joel Meyer almost lost his head. Like, I love announcers. The best announcers don't scream when something unbelievable happens.
Yeah.
They just go silent for a second.
Yeah.
Like, Joel Meyer was like, Aminu with the jumper. It was pretty great. Where the hell did Golden State defense go?
They got Andrew Bogut and became a bad defensive team. That doesn't make any sense.
Bogut didn't play last night. I was wrong on the podcast yesterday. He stayed out for the back-to-back. But even then, you know, this team was defending really well without him. And, God. The Thunder put up 34 points in the first quarter, and that was it.
Oh, I do see that Andres Bjelland's played 12 minutes. That could be a factor.
That'll explain a little bit. Yeah, Mark Jackson's got to get them settled back down and get them – he needs to get them – I will say, though, Carl mentioned this the other day. He said – because he's really worried. The Nuggets are at home versus the Bulls, which we'll talk about in a second. And then they've got, I think, a four-game road trip before the All-Star break. They've got 4-5 before the All-Star break. And he was like, I'm really worried about that trip.
Yeah.
Because he was like, basically 2 weeks before the All-Star game, everybody checks out. Everybody just starts checking out because they're tired and they can see the light at the end of the tunnel for a week vacation. That's all they can see.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if Golden State's going through a little bit of that right now, where it's just trying to get to the All-Star break.
Do you think they should have the Monday and Tuesday without games after the All-Star? Like, give them a day to come back, maybe a day to practice on that Tuesday, and then they have games on Wednesday?
No, it depends on – I mean, because part of it is it depends on – they schedule it pretty well. I will say this, because part of it is most of the teams have off on Thursday. For most of the league will play on Wednesday, and then you have the TNT doubleheader that leads into All-Star Weekend on TNT.
Right.
And so they get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then like the Wolves don't go back to play until Tuesday, or until Wednesday.
Yeah.
So they've got until Wednesday off.
Just FYI for people watching basketball Wednesday night, it's going to be bad.
Oh, it's...
You might have one good game, but it's going to be really bad basketball. Guys will be checked out. Like, that's just how it is. You know how you are before you go on vacation at work. That's how they are.
and I'm not working that day. Yeah. Finally, I don't get screwed on the schedule. And then, so Tuesday on the, let's see, the 19th? Yeah, I mean, there's a full slate, but really, you know, Boston's is on the road. They're here in Denver for, and they've got two All-Stars, but one of them's out, Rondo's out. So it's really just KG who's going to have been busy. The Spurs have two, and they're in Sacramento. So there's some road games. Chicago, I think, has two. Yeah, Chicago's got two, and they're in New Orleans. A bunch of road games for them.
Yeah.
Memphis has one, and they're at Detroit. But for the most part, you know, you're noticing, like, the like Miami's not playing today. You know,
right.
So they kind of covered for a little bit of it. I think it's okay. I think it's doable. I think it's okay. What do you think of the Alicia Keys halftime show?
Yeah, I've never cared about the All-Star Game halftime show. I probably will continue to not care. Like
so
she's a good artist. It's not. Here's the thing. It's not Pitbull, so I'm happy.
Yeah, you don't. What, you don't like Pitbull?
No, I absolutely do not.
I want to mention this. I said Toby will talk about this today, so I do want to drop this in. We'll talk about more of it later. I have a plan. So.
Like a bank
the problem
heist?
With the NBA is they want to make the All-Star halftime show into a thing, but they don't really, because NBA All-Star is a thing for NBA people, but it doesn't have the same kind of mass appeal that a lot of things
right.
do.
Right.
Which is kind of – it makes sense. Like the NBA is like, well, no, it's like, you know, the All-Star dunk contest and, you know, it's the All-Star game and, you know, it's this, you know, it's a big celebration party. So I kind of get it. But at the same time, it's one where what's the real event that everyone actually ends up watching? Like people do watch, the casual fan watches.
Dunk contest.
Outside of the All-Star weekend, what's the one thing during the year?
Oh, the draft.
The finals.
Like, I would say the draft, kind of.
The draft, I would agree with you that the draft actually does get more because people, college fan, basketball fans watch it.
Yeah.
But in terms of basketball games, you can't build a party around the draft.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a recipe for disaster.
I've done it. It's not fun.
So don't do that. But the finals, and the finals, they never make a really big deal out of it. It's just like a series.
Yeah.
You know? So I have this idea. After game two, we're going to have a two-day break. There's 2 days off, and then game three begins.
Okay.
In game three, one, the final should be on neutral court. It should rotate around just like the Super Bowl. NBA Finals, neutral court.
You want the whole seven games?
No, you split between two cities.
Okay.
So, winner of the All-Star game, it depends on where it is.
Oh, that
right?
would be
so,
cool. That would be cool. Like, if we did this year, we could have it split between New York and L.A. so those fans could actually see something in the finals.
But, like, it rotates around. So you've got, like, the West destination, which could be, like, Vegas, and you get the East destination, which could be, like, Miami or, you know, like Atlantic City or wherever.
Atlantic City? Oh, I'm in.
That
sounds like a stabtastic time.
Right. But wherever. Okay, New York or wherever.
Yeah.
And then there's a two-day break after game two. And game three is a pivotal game, right? So it's either 2-0 and the other team has to win that game. Or it's 1-1 and it's the pivotal game three. And then you make the big halftime show into game three. Game three's got the big, massive halftime show. And it should be – I'm torn between either Jay-Z or Pearl Jam. Those are the two options. I like Pearl Jam because of the Mookie Blaylock thing.
Yeah, no, if this was 94, that would be an excellent choice.
They're like the only, but here's the problem. I was talking about this with my wife. Like, they're the only band from, you know, because for years the Super Bowl has done, like, Tom Petty and the Rolling Stones, like these rock and roll legends.
Sure.
The Foo Fighters and the Pearl Jam are really the only rock and roll legends from the 90s. That's it.
Yeah.
From, like, the generation where I was a teenager and grew up.
I've got an idea.
What?
Tupac Hologram.
Tupac Hologram.
Seriously, that one looked eerily real. And two, everybody loves Tupac.
I think it should be Jay-Z. I really do, because that's like, you know, even this beyond the fact that he's the owner. I mean, that's I haven't met an NBA player that says they don't listen to Jay-Z yet.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the voice of the – and it would be good because it's kind of representative of the culture. That's one of my problems with the Super Bowl is like – like, welcome, rock and roll, you know, Hall of Fame legend. And I'm just like, this is not representative of the player demographic. Like, this is, what are you doing? I understand this is great for, you know, for God built a farmer, but still.
Yeah.
I just think it would be kind of an interesting idea. I guess the biggest thing is I'm jealous that the Super Bowl is such a big party, and I want the finals to be more of a party.
I think that, I mean, I still say, like, football is great and all, but the reason it is so big is because it's so easy to bet on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amount of money getting thrown around on the Super Bowl, it's just an easy game to bet on. It really is. It's a very simple game to bet on, and the NBA will never have that. And I think that's a big thing that drives. Like, there's not going to be an office pool for who wins game two of the finals. Like, there's just like, there's just never going to be that. Like, it's just not there. Here, I have an idea. I do like that idea, but this popped into my head. All-Star Game halftime show should be the two finalists of the dunk contest. You do the dunk contest Saturday night, you get the two finalists, those guys go into the halftime show, that's your halftime show.
That's pretty good.
They've got like 17 hours to plan something against the other guy.
Yeah, because then you know, because that's one of the things I think a lot of the guys run into, is they're like, well, I'll go and we'll see if these dunks work. And then sometimes they do, and they're like, oh, I made the finals.
Right.
Oh, now what?
Right.
So now they could actually plan. That'd be good. That's pretty good.
That's not bad. Back to the – I like the idea of a neutral court for the finals, or even two neutral courts to – that might be overkill, though. I guess you don't want the team staying in the city for, like, 3 weeks or 2 weeks, so that's probably
right.
Good. You probably do need to travel a little bit.
So, like, let's say the East wins on All-Star. Let's say they did it this year, and the East wins.
Yeah.
And the two cities were – let's put New Orleans in the East, even though that would confuse everybody.
Right.
But let's say they do. So it's New Orleans and Vegas. So the first two games would be in New Orleans, the next three in Vegas, the final two in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And we would have the most hungover NBA finals in history, but it'd be amazing. I just think the spectacle would be improved.
Yeah, it really would. And that's like kind of a cool side story to see who is the most focused.
Yeah.
Like who's gonna turn down that extra 2 hours at the craps table or in the VIP room or whatever in Vegas to go home and get a better night's sleep for game four, you know?
And with the fact that it's the indoor arena opens up a lot more opportunities for cities that you can go to and places you can go to, and you could select some of these cities, honestly, that don't even have an NBA team. Like the West could be like a Kansas City, which has got a phenomenal arena, and nobody's getting in trouble there.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to do. So you could do like Kansas, or even you could do like Kansas City is the East, and then Utah is the West, and it could be like the most boring finals experience ever, where teams are tanking to get out of the finals.
Right. Like, I'd really like to win a championship this year, but I don't want to go to Kansas City.
I don't want to go to Kansas City. No, I just think I want to add more of the spectacle because it winds up feeling just very much like, and they played, and then it was over, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, the NBA Finals is a very much a basketball fan thing. It's not a casual person thing because you're not selling, you know, you're not having the anticipation of selling advertising. You don't have the betting as heavy. You don't have office pools. Like, there's no random secretary who picked because a Raven would peck the eyes out of a gold miner.
Right.
You know, like, that's why the secretary, like, picked the person or picked that team to win, and then they win the office pool. Like, none of that happens in the NBA Finals.
And that's why everyone says they want it to be more like March Madness, but you're never going to find, one, the owners will never go for it, and
right.
Two, you're never going to find, I don't think real basketball fans are ever going to want it because we all like the fact that our champion's legitimate.
Yeah, exactly.
We're honestly the only sport that to a 95% probability guarantees that the champion is legitimate.
Which,
even if it's not necessarily the best team,
yeah,
you can make the argument.
Well, it's
you
funny.
Can't make the argument the Ravens were the best team in football this year.
Right.
And that's awesome. And that's part of what makes it, I think, more appealing. We I think our culture, we like those things. We like the Cinderella upsets in the NCAA.
That's why I didn't like the idea of everyone saying, oh, we need parity in the NBA. Everyone should have a chance. Like, I don't believe that. I think the best talent with the best managed teams and good coaching, like, those should win. Like, I like legitimacy in my NBA champion. And what's funny is, like, you know, you say 95% of the time the best team wins out. 2 years ago, I thought that the Mavericks were the exception. I thought they just got hot and managed to run through. But now you look at, you have a little bit of perspective on that where you can look back and you look at where the league is with with team defense and pick and roll defense and shooters to spread the floor and everything. Like, it just showed where the NBA was evolving. Like, yeah, that's really what it was. Like, they didn't get hot. They figured out the system before everybody else did. They were ahead of the curve. At the time, I thought, I don't really think that's the best team in basketball, but they won the championship. Good on them. But now looking back, it's like, no, they knew, like, Rick Carlisle and the organization saw where the NBA was headed, and they just got there first.
I'm wrong about so much that I have to cling on to the select five things that I'm right about. And so in November of 2010, I wrote a thing where I was basically like, you know, the Mavericks are a legitimate title contender. I was like, they really honestly are playing that well.
Yeah.
And then the injuries came through, and I was like, well, we'll see how they kind of bounce back. I bought into that Mavericks team. I didn't think they were going to sweep the Lakers because I was so used to the Lakers just winning, not for any sort of reason. And that was one of the ones that I really, there's a couple of series I really regret picking against my brain against.
Yeah.
Where you take these overriding things. You know, we kind of talked about it with Heat Celtics the other day, where it's like, well, the Heat are better. And I'm not necessarily going to pick the Celtics. I won't do that because it's a different situation. But the Mavericks were one where I was like, you know, the Mavericks really do match up well with the Lakers. And I was like, well, yeah, but the Lakers just win. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So I took the Lakers, and then, you know, I wasn't surprised when the Mavericks won that series. I was shocked they swept them, but I wasn't surprised. They were a really great team. See, for me, like the 2010 Celtics getting to the finals, that was a bad team. And honestly, the Lakers, I will continue this day that the 2009-2010 Lakers were not a great team. I think they were the best team, but I don't think that they were like, I don't put them up there with like the great teams of the last decade. I don't think they were up there. It's an interesting debate, though. Dallas managed to not lose to Portland. It was pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
They didn't blow it. It was pretty great. Portland made a comeback, and it was a 3-point game, and I was like, here we go again. And there are moments I love about these kind of games, and one is they closed it to 3, and the Mavericks turned it over, and the entire crowd in Dallas went quiet. Because you could just see them going, oh, God, not again. No.
We've seen this before.
Not again. Not again. You know. But they held on. Mayo made a big shot. Carter made a big shot, and they held on. And you were at San Antonio, Minnesota for a game that I have to tell you, I wasn't angry. I was just sad. The game just made me sad.
Yeah, it's
it was competitive, too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was competitive. I mean, you know, Spurs didn't have Duncan and Ginobili, so that help make it more competitive, but the Wolves did actually play, I wouldn't say well, but they played with like a little bit of fight in them, which was good. They just, you know, it's the same old story. They just have too many injuries, and they're working guys back. Rubio played a lot of minutes last night. He was horrible with his shot. He was really good with everything else, I thought. But like, this is a team that needs floor spacing, and their two best floor spacers are in suits with Chase Budner and Kevin Love. And that's just how it is, and that's what they have to deal with. And I was talking with Steve McPherson after the game and saying, like, we were like going over like what's great about Adelman's system and what kind of components you need for it. And they simply don't have those components right now. Like, they don't have those spacers to make the system work. And especially with Kirilenko out, in that game last night, like, they just didn't have the guy to stick on the hot scorer, and which was Danny Green, who was moving so well without the ball, and they used him so perfectly. And they didn't have a guy on offense to kind of work stuff out of the high post. They tried to use Peck that way, but Peck is not a high post guy. Like, he's just not. He can pass a little bit, but not anything that fits what Adelman likes to do out of that high post. And it just leads to a lot of bogged down offense, and so you're seeing Adelman's system run a little bit without the skill set necessary to run it effectively. And it's just, you know, it sucks, but whatever. The teams get injured, you deal with it. They'll hopefully get healthy enough for like a couple weeks at the end of the season so they can see what they have and go into the summer.
You're very Scott Brooks about kind of the fate of your team, because Scott Brooks is the one who he will never. It's one of the things I love about the Thunder. To a man, they don't complain about officiating. They just don't. They're just like, we should have won.
Yeah.
It's on us.
That's the thing I don't like complaining about officiating. I did I'd have to say, Joey Crawford officiated last night. I think it's the second time he's done a Wolves home game this year.
No, I have to talk about that play. Oh, my God, I'm so angry about it.
And he, I mean, you know, we make jokes about how he wants to be the superstar on the court and blah, blah, blah. He is worth the price of admission. Like, if you just watch him and his mannerisms, it's fun. I got distracted from the game watching him on a couple of things.
There was a play. Splitter caught it on the left block. Crawford is on the baseline on the right side.
Yeah.
Far right. Pekovic reaches around and swipes at the ball clean. And they call a foul.
Yeah.
He calls a foul. I'm like, there's no way you could have seen it unless you have x-ray vision.
I actually think he's overall a pretty good ref.
I do too.
But there are times where he gets in that mood. He gets a little cranky and he decides he's going to take over the game. It's really what we wanted LeBron to do for so long. He needed that Joey Crawford.
He doesn't defer. He just takes over.
Yeah, he just takes over. Rubio thought he got fouled. Like, Rubio's been complaining to the officials a lot lately because he's trying to draw contact instead of just making plays when he drives to the hoop. And he's not getting the foul calls. And, you know, I think it's borderline whether he should get it or not. I don't think they're horribly missed calls at all. And so it happened like 3 minutes into the game. And he complains to another official. He wasn't even talking to Joey Crawford. He's like, hey, he hit me on my hand. Or he hit me on my wrist or something. He motions to his arm. Like, he hit me with his back turned to Crawford. He's talking to another official. And Crawford tees him up. And then there are points in the game where there would be a foul against the Wolves. And there was one in particular where there was a foul against the Wolves, maybe against Rubio. And Parker, like, I think Parker knew he got away with something. And he, like, hits Rubio. Like, he gives him, like, a little friendly tap in the stomach. Like, oh, I got you there. And Rubio laughs. And, like, Crawford, like, locks in on Rubio to see if he's laughing at him for making the call. Like, it was really obvious that he was looking to run somebody. Like, he was looking to run Rubio. All he needed was just, like, one of those, give me one reason. Like, just give me a reason. And he didn't eject him, but that was a funny sequence of, like, Rubio laughing at something Parker said to him and Crawford, like, making sure they weren't laughing at him. It was awesome. Like, it was really awesome. Brea got really frustrated, not with just the officials, but I think with his team, too. Like, there were a couple of times where he thought he was open and he wanted the ball and they're losing, so he, you know, exacerbates it a little bit more. And he actually ends the game perfectly, like, this wild, out-of-control drive to the basket, like, around, like, in the middle of, like, three Spurs defenders. Throws up this horrible layup that hits the bottom of the rim and bounces down, and the Spurs grab the ball with like 4 seconds left, and Brea just continues right off the court into the locker room. It was great.
I noticed Andre Miller has just if he's on the floor at the end of games, if there's under 10 seconds left, he's walking to the back.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's just gone. I don't have time for this. And then he's always out of there before media arrives too. So yeah, the game was.
And they actually outshot the Spurs from three-point range. That's the weird thing.
What?
Yeah. The Spurs shot 40% from three-point range, 10 to 25. Wolves were 8 of 18 for 44%.
That's insane because all I could see, ever since you told me that they hit front rim continuously, that's all I can see.
Yeah, when they miss.
And every time I'm just like, oh, stop it.
Yeah, when they miss, it's almost always front rim. It's weird.
We got two games tonight, and they're good ones.
Yeah.
The first one, I don't know.
No, it's going to be good.
Dwight may not play.
That's fine.
Dwight made a big to-do about how this is him and his life, and no one has a right to judge him.
I mean, as long as you wear Affliction t-shirts, everyone has a right to judge you.
He didn't ask for this kind of attention.
No, you absolutely did. This is exactly the attention you asked for. I don't even have a problem with Dwight. I just hate the entire, like, anytime someone gets, like, pissy with me and they're like, you can't judge me, only God can judge me, I always just respond with, like, then why am I so good at it? Like, that, it's just a really, really prickish thing to say to someone, and that's my response, because it's just like it shuts them up most of the time. And Dwight's like, no one can judge me. It's like, no, we can, and we're pretty good at it.
We've had a lot of practice.
Yeah, you've given us a lot to work with.
Let me look at the line, because this is actually a really interesting question. Celtics at home, giving a point and a half. Basically, pick them.
Oof. That is confusing.
You know what I'm doing.
You're riding with the Celtics.
I'm riding that Celtics gravy train, baby.
Which means I gotta go Lakers. even without Powell and without Dwight and his life coach.
Should we talk about the Powell thing real quick? I know we're running long on time.
Yeah. Let's talk about that real quick.
I mean, sorry about it last night.
He's out 6 weeks?
Up to 6 weeks. That's my thing is, Kimber or CBSSports.com broke that story yesterday of Powell being out up to 6 weeks with torn plantar fascia.
Yeah.
His foot. Heard a pop, he's got a mild tear. Here's part of it. So, it's first week of February, which means he'll be back middle of March if he has timeline. You look at conditioning and his age, and you have to tack on maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks extra.
Yeah.
So I've just been pretty much rounding it out to April 1st. I think they should shut him down for the season. And just if he gets back to the playoffs, great. That's kind of where I'm at.
I don't know. I think you bring him back. It's not like they're going to have some – it's hard to imagine that they're going to have something so good that you don't want to disrupt chemistry.
I guess here's part of it. They got to survive 6 to 8 weeks without him.
Yeah.
That's the key. If they make it to April 1st and they're within range, I can see them bringing him back and then making a playoff push and surging in front of the three other teams.
Yeah.
And sneaking in. That I can see.
Like, yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of the way you got to look at it.
Here's who they've got over the next 2 months in terms of quality opponents. Miami, the Clippers, the Celtics twice, Portland, Dallas, if you consider them that. They're at Denver. They've got Atlanta, Oklahoma City, Chicago, Atlanta again. They're at Indiana, at Golden State, and then if you consider Milwaukee quality team, they're at Milwaukee.
Jeez.
March is softer. This month's rough. But the problem is they can't afford to slide this month. Even with the All-Star break to get healthy, they can't lose. That's the problem with this two-game stretch even right now, or three-game stretch where it's Celtics, back-to-back Bobcats, and then Heat. They got to go 2-3. They can't afford – they really can't afford like a three-game losing streak.
Right.
Because then you're just getting too late in the season to be able to make up ground. I mean, they got one stretch between – after the All-Star break, they open at – they're at like next week, they got Phoenix and the Clippers.
Yeah.
The All-Star break, and then Boston, Portland, Dallas, Denver, Minnesota. And theoretically, Love could be back from Minnesota.
Yeah, and maybe even Chase.
Yeah.
Might be back by then.
That finishes out February, and they pick up in March, and it's Atlanta, Oklahoma City, a New Orleans team that plays them well. Toronto with Rudy Gay, who's a little bit better. Not really. Chicago.
God, you hate Toronto fans.
That kind of softens out. But, I mean, they've got, they don't have a whole lot of room for error here. If they get to April 1, they get to April 1 and they're still four games back at .500, what do? Do you want to bring him back to finish out a useless season?
Yeah, I think you have to.
Why?
Because I think that you have to figure out some kind of chemistry there in case you can't trade him.
I think you can trade him. It just depends on what.
I think that there's...
Let's be honest. The Wolves, if it's Derek Williams and whoever for Powell, Wolves are going to say yes, as long as it only gets tricky if it's like Pekovic. That's the only situation where it's tricky.
But that's the problem is they don't have big contracts to send. They have Love to send. They're not going to do that. They have Kirilenko to send, they're not going to do that. And then everything else is like a 4-for-1.
Are they under the cap enough to be able to take on the trade exception?
I don't. Depends on Peck's salary number. Because he's restricted. I think they're, I mean, they're just above the salary cap now. No, they're not going to have enough money, or they're not going to have enough room with Peck's cap hold. I mean, you can wipe Brandon Roy off of it, but I think Peck's cap hold is going to be significant to where it'll probably take them out of that.
So you think they bring him back?
I think you should, because you need to figure out chemistry just in case he's stuck there. I don't think it's a great plan, but I think that's the reality of it.
How do the Lakers win tonight without Powell if Dwight doesn't play?
Kobe and Ron. The best buddy cop show on TV.
Kobe World Peace.
Yep, Kobe World
Mamba
Peace.
Mamba World Peace.
I'd love Ron in this situation of him essentially playing the four. I think they should use him as the four more often.
I will say this. Teams that run give Boston's defensive system fits. I've noticed over the last couple of years, the Suns have always the Nash Suns played them really well.
Yeah.
And gave them a lot of problems. So if D'Antoni is able to get them into a gear where they're actually moving and Powell's not going to be lumbering up the court, you know, they got a chance here.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to worry. They're not really worried about the size, because it's just like, you know, okay, Kevin Garnett's going to beat Robert Sacre. Well, he'd be beating anybody else, so who cares?
Right.
So, you know, they're without Sullinger, so it's really just Bass you're worried about. And then Meta could probably body Bass. Lakers, yeah. Man, Lakers can win this game. I don't think they will, but I think they can win this game. You know what? It's sad, because I'm doing a 4-point play today on the Celtics, but the good game is the one I'm going to tonight.
Is
game tonight is good.
And considering you skipped shoot around today,
I'm so mad.
There's a 95% chance that Rose ends up playing.
It made me feel better, though, because the Bulls fans were like, you realize Tibbs never says anything at shoot around. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, players never talk. I was like, oh, okay, I feel better. Nuggets are favored by 6. That's high. That's way too high.
I feel like if they're going to win, it's going to be big.
Yeah.
That's kind of, like, I think that they kind of run away with it at the end to push it, like, to, like, a 10 or 11 point win, if they win. But I don't know if they win.
Yeah, I mean, Joakim Noah is going to get whatever he wants. Samuel Down there scored 35 on this team.
Yeah.
Joakim Noah is going to have it all.
Just like Monte Ellis. Monte Ellis have it all.
You know. Their guards... Their wing, Luol Deng versus Andre Iguodala will be a fun matchup.
That'll be good. I'm interested to see how Fareed does against someone like Boozer. Just because I think Boozer is just calculated enough to kind of win that matchup, but he has to have energy and he has to rebound. Otherwise, Fareed will eat him up.
This is what's weird with Fareed. He loses to savvy guys who aren't superstars.
Yeah.
But against the high, and Boo's not a superstar, but against high level guys like Powell, who you'd expect to destroy him, he plays amazingly well.
Yeah.
So I think he's got a chance there. Although part of me kind of wonders, they should. Well, he probably won't because he's worried about the space. I wonder if Carl will put Kufa/McGee on Boozer and then let Fareed battle Noah's energy.
That would be fun.
It'll be violent as well. It'll be a fight.
That's like two Tasmanian devils going at it.
It's a lot of hair.
It is a lot of hair.
It's a lot of hair. JaVale versus Boozer could be fun.
I feel like JaVale's gonna try to dunk on him while applying that spray on hair.
We got Marco Bellinelli versus Danilo Gallinari.
Wow, that sounds awful. That doesn't sound interesting at all.
Transition threes all over. Should be good though.
Yeah, that will be a fun one.
The pace battle is what's going to be interesting. Is the Bulls try and grind it out, and the Nuggets try and do what they do, which is run, run, run.
Who are you taking? Are you taking Bulls or the Nuggets? You laying the points?
I'm taking the Bulls to at least cover. I don't know if I'm going to pick them to win, but
yeah,
I think the Bulls will cover. I think six is high. I can't see it being more than a 4-point game. The other thing is, if the Bulls are up 10 in the fourth quarter, they need to just start leaving now, because the Nuggets go nuts when they're down double digits in the fourth quarter.
They have a very good panic game.
They do. It's Corey Brewer.
Yeah.
Corey Brewer have it all.
He does. Just unleash the leak out.
It's crazy. His energy is just really weird. And it was funny, too, because he played all 12 minutes of the fourth quarter against their game against Milwaukee in the huge comeback and was plus 15 along with Gallo. And Carl postgame singled out the defensive efforts of Ty Lawson, Andre Miller, who played like 2 minutes, Andre Iguodala, Danilo Gallinari, and Kenneth Faried, and didn't mention Corey Brewer once.
That makes sense.
All right, this thing's gone long, but it's been a good one. It's been strong.
Yeah, it's been. It's at least been an hour. It's been an hour of talking.
So congratulations to you for listening to this.
Yep, good job.
May God have mercy on your soul.
Matt, have fun in the game tonight.
You too. All right, have fun. Stay home.
All right.
Bye.
See you.